Today on the Inside Flap.
And then he gets behind the wheel. Dave gets in the passenger seat. I get in the back of it. And at that point, he decides to drop this beauty on us. He tells us that he's 99 years old.
Wow.
And then he drops his foot on the gas pedal and peels out of this parking lot like he was a young kid, a hot rod. It was the scariest 5-minute car ride I've ever been in my life.
And the dogs act like there's home invaders with a crowbar, like at the door.
They're going
or
crazy.
An axe or something. Something's happening. So I get my glasses on and I go and I look outside and there is a car in our front yard and it's like on top of our mailbox.
So I go to let Raven out.
Incredible shrinking dog.
Yep. And I open the door and the next thing I know, you know, this 70-pound black lab just come bursting into the house.
Oh, man.
It's pitch blackout, right?
What?
It's pitch blackout, right? So you don't expect it.
No, you don't expect it.
So it's like, holy.
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to the show. Seated across the table to my right is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
And to my left is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Thank you guys for joining us. This is episode number 58 of...
Is it 58 or 59?
It's 58.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought we did 58 last week.
I think I thought it was 58, but it was really 57.
Okay.
Gotcha. I'm just looking forward all the time. Just looking ahead.
Okay.
Dave seems to have forgotten the name of the podcast,
but that's fine. There we go.
I try to pay attention on occasion.
Yeah.
A kid came up to me today and he said, Excelsior.
Oh, did he really?
Really?
I said, Excelsior. And he said, yeah, I got that from this podcast I listened to. I said, oh, why, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, this is that's your tea, isn't it?
That's
why you're
tea.
Eyeballing me.
I was wondering
me.
What you were doing with my tea.
I was getting comfortable with it.
Easy. Everybody, hands off.
All right, it's fine.
The host's tea.
We didn't give Andrew a place to... I like to leave my tea bag in as long as possible.
Yeah,
Andrew does not. He does it the proper way.
Andrew gets it out. He sits over there and counts down from 60 and then yanks it out.
That's the proper way for tea,
yeah,
I'm
supposed
sure.
supposed to be 3 minutes as you don't let it and you don't squeeze the tea bags mm-hmm. because... Then the bitter stuff comes out. I mean, so
I like this.
You know,
well now we've got the metal tea
strainers
mm-hmm. and the Earl Grey tea, loose leaf Earl Grey. We're enjoying.
Love the bergamot. Bergamot is the secret to happiness, I think.
Mm.
Here, tell Andrew he can set it on this, Steve.
All right. In any case, welcome to episode 58. Today's show is brought to you by our Amazon link. Next time you need to order something from Amazon, like one of the amazing books we're about to recommend, visit our website first, theinsideflap.com.
Or some tea.
Or some tea. Maybe you're looking for a little Earl Grey tea. Maybe you want an Earl Grey candle. We have an Earl Grey candle upstairs. Go ahead and visit our website first, theinsideflap.com, and click through on the banner. It doesn't cost you a thing, and it helps to, keep this little ship afloat, to steal a metaphor from another podcast. Also, when you click on the link, you can see every book we've ever recommended on the show, so check that out. It's pretty, find that pretty interesting. Some damn good books up there.
So you think about it. I mean, so we recommend... I mean, we really discuss between 4 to 6 books a show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? So let's average that out to five books.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Let's do the math times...
I'll let you do the math.
Let's just say 60 episodes to keep the math simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what is that?
300 books.
300 books. So, I mean, we've gone through in a little over a year, 300 books. I mean, that'll fill a couple of nice shelves.
That's a lot.
Yep. I was checking my Goodreads page. I read 93 books last year.
Just show off.
93.
Show off.
slacker as far as I'm concerned.
Really? Tell me.
I've read probably 10 books just in this last week.
I have read a lot this year, a weird amount.
So, spent a few weeks out in the most unhealthiest place on the planet Earth, a few days out there, which is, of course, I'm speaking of Sin City, Lost Wages, Las Vegas, Nevada. Some of my friends from back east for our annual pilgrimage out there. Got in the cab at the airport, so just flew in, touched down, get into the cab.
Did you have a dream of your cardigan?
Los Angeles. That's
I know.
Miley Cyrus. Yeah,
thank you.
No, was not looking at the Hollywood sign.
Okay.
The cab pulls away, and literally almost before my butt hits the back seat, the cab driver is swinging his head around, and he said, "Hey. You want some weed?"
Nuh-uh. What? No,
yeah, he asked him, so I was like, excuse me. I wasn't sure if I heard him correctly. I said, excuse me? He said, yeah. Do you want to buy some weed?
I guess clearly it's legal there.
I said, no. I'm curious why you would ask me. And he said, well, it's legal here in Nevada, but apparently you have to buy it off the strip. And so you can't get it on the strip, but there's like a corridor like a mile off the strip where you can get it. And he said that's what everybody wants as soon as they land.
But
they
want
to get their weed
on. Use the weed in the actual strip, but you can't purchase it there. Is that right?
Well, I think so, because I did see at one point a guy walking down the strip with a handful of the greenest, stickiest of the ickiest. Handful of weed walking down the strip, offering it up to anybody who would want some.
Huh.
Want some weed?
So now this is not a new development. I mean, weed's been legal for 2 or 3 years in Nevada.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been legal out here in Colorado.
But you
for
have
a
needed
while.
A medical while. Card.
Well,
you
I mean,
no longer need a medical card in Nevada for it.
But I still think it's been 2 or 3 years.
Maybe it has.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So it's not a recent development there.
But it's the first time you, Dave Medicus, have seen it, and Dave goes every year.
Yeah. Well, the first time I've been aware of it, yeah.
Yeah.
But I said, no good, sir, I am from Colorado.
That's all you have to say.
You do not have to proffer
it is not
your
a novelty to
Nevada
us.
Nevada weed for me. No. And then the next morning, we're at a little restaurant for breakfast, and I order a cup of coffee, and the waiter says, with or without Bailey's.
Oh.
Like, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Is that something you need to ask? He said, well, this is Las Vegas. So I said, no, I don't need any.
That seems pretty normal for Vegas. I feel like if they didn't ask that, they wouldn't be doing their job.
I guess so. But, you know, it just took me.
Spend more. Spend more at the casino.
A little bit. Yep. You know, Vegas is not all about alcohol and weed. However, there is some culture.
Some gambling.
Out there.
Some gambling culture.
Gambling, yes. But there's some
smoking culture.
Some culture. You need to. In fact, we went to a museum.
Huh.
Yeah, when we were there, it was the Mob Museum.
I'm going to make them an offer again with you.
They did ask us at the ticket booth as we were buying our tickets.
Weed.
They did not ask us for weed, but they did want to know if we wanted it with or without the Moonshine Tour add-on.
Really?
Yeah, and now Big Tom, of course, he accepted the offer of the Moonshine add-on. I think it was an extra like 30, 40 bucks for it. But what do you get for that is you get to go down to the basement, and they have you sit down and sip on moonshine where they tell you all about the mob and Prohibition. Now, he said it was very fascinating, but he was also drunk on moonshine, so it's really hard to tell. He was trying to tell me all about it. I'm like, Tom, slow down. I don't know what you're saying.
That's funny.
We were walking over to Old Vegas, and all the homeless people over there. Well, a lovely stretch of concrete Old Vegas is.
Mm. Is that like where Sinatra Sands and all were?
Yeah, not even that. It's like the very first casinos were there, and now they've got like a big zip line there.
Oh, the
zip lines
are.
They also have a lot of people, a lot of like street performers there, and a lot of scrupulous characters. And we were, you know, kind of keeping a close hand on our wallets, making sure we weren't getting picked. It was definitely the kind of place where you could get pickpocketed.
Yeah, sure.
I felt. But, you know, the Mob Museum was jam-packed.
Huh.
I mean, it was to the gills.
People love the mob.
People love the mob. They might not love museums, but they do love the Mob Museum. The biggest problem I had with it, now this is one of those, it was in the old courthouse in Las Vegas, and you go up to this beautiful old courthouse with marble staircase and really nice, but the exhibits on the exhibit on the third floor and then on the second floor, then of course the main floor, then of course the moonshine they keep in the basement. But when you walk through the exhibits, the way they have the exhibits laid out, they're in very small rooms and the passageway is kind of tight as you're working your way through it.
Mm-hmm.
So at a couple of the stops, they've got docents there who are telling stories about somebody. Like they had a guy at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre wall. They had the actual brick wall up on the wall. They had a wall on the wall. And there was a guy telling a story about it. Now, the problem was the room is so small. In order to get to the rest of the exhibit, you have to cut through that room.
Oh.
However, he's talking and people are just
queuing up.
Yeah, they're it's a mob scene right in front of them.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Thank you. I didn't even mean that. Good one.
Thank you.
It's a true mob scene at the mob museum, and you couldn't get through without like walking directly in front of him. So now you're just stuck there listening to this guy prattle on about the Valentine's Day Massacre. It was a little bit annoying. Just the crowds. It was unbelievable.
Hey, Andrew, Dave Medicus, if he sees someone talking and you're in a public area, Dave Medicus can't get away fast enough.
That's right. You know, I don't really like can't. To stand there. And
you cannot. And I'll be like, no, I wanted to hear the thing. I was going to stand in line here and wait. And he's like, I'll be in the other room.
Well, it's the patter that they have, which
you
clearly
get real stressed out.
They've memorized it and they're just reading it to you. Yeah. And you can tell it's the exact same inflection. They've said it with every time like they've talked about it.
You get like a hunted look in your face.
It's more like a wounded look to my soul is what it is. But you know, I guess they really, really love the mob out there in Vegas, because there was a lot of mob related stuff. A few years ago, we took a tour of some of the filming locations of the movie Casino while we were out there, which was pretty, it's pretty interesting.
Cause I like that movie.
They take you out on a little shuttle bus and you go around to the different, like the house where Sharon Stone was in it. Yeah. And so we got to see that. And then the guy takes you to like a pizza place where a mobster had been gunned down. And he gets a New York style pizza and he tells stories about that. Then he dropped us off at this old hotel just off the strip. It's called the Royal Resort Hotel. This guy says, hey, there's this guy playing the piano in the lobby. Mm-hmm. He used to play piano with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. I want to introduce you to him. So we walk over there and this old guy playing the piano. He's like, hey, how you doing? Hey, you want to go see a free show? And Dave and I had no plans. We're like, sure, why not? It sounds like an adventure. He's like, all right, hold on. So he grabs his bony hand into his little tip jar, shoves some bills into his pockets, and starts walking towards the door. He's like, yeah, come on, come with me.
Oh dear.
We're like, and Dave and I exchange a look. Like at this point, what do we go with him? Well, you know what? This is the turning point right here.
Of your
it
life.
Could really turn take a turn for the South here. But we said, you know what? It sounds like an adventure. Let's go. So we follow the old guy into the parking lot where his BMW SUV was parked. And he's like, come on, I'll drive you. And again, a couple of looks were exchanged. We weren't really sure, but we said, hey.
You got in the car with him.
Why not? We get into the SUV with him. And then he gets behind the wheel. Dave gets in the passenger seat. I get in the back of it. And at that point, he decides to drop this beauty on us. He tells us that he's 99 years old.
Wow.
And then he drops his foot on the gas pedal and peels out of this parking lot like he was a young kid, a hot rod. It was the scariest 5-minute car ride I've ever been in my life. Like my hands kept going up to like trying to steer. Like he would ride everybody driving out. He was riding right on their butts. And every time he took a turn, he didn't decelerate through the turn. He accelerated through every single turn. 99 years old.
Of course, you've never driven with my twin brother Anthony going 100 and some miles an hour on Las Vegas Boulevard either, have you?
Yeah, I've done that as well. This guy could give Anthony a run for the money. So he takes us to this musical review he was telling us about. So this guy, apparently he served in World War II.
Yes.
He said, claimed to be a general in World War II, the Vietnam War, and the Korean War.
Oh, maybe.
And while we looked him up, his name was Joe Vento. And there's actually a Joe Vento Day in Las Vegas. The mayor proclaimed it. It was his birthday in 2016. Joe Vento is his name. You can check him out. and we took us up to this this musical review called Pinup.
Joe Vento continues to play music at 100.
Still playing. God bless him. Yep, still playing.
You guys got in the car with this guy.
We did, yeah.
That's cool.
So he kept talking. I was walking into the theater. Oh, you guys got to see. You got to see the women in this show. Wait till you see the women.
Oh, no.
And we knew nothing about this show. It was called Pinup. It was set during World War II and a former Playboy Playmate of the Year. And I guess they had some filmed segments for the show, and some of it was old World War II archival footage that he had supplied for them of him playing the piano. So we got a booth right up front. They treated him like royalty.
You guys in for free?
Yes, we had the seats of honor right next to him for the show.
The show is still on in Vegas.
Is it still on?
Yes.
that was 3 years ago, maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's still on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. There it is. Yeah. Pinup. Yep. Yeah.
This looks like a show that Andrew Dowd might enjoy.
Andrew might be into that one.
No comment.
As Andrew will look at a picture of an author before he reads the book to make sure it'll. But
before and during and after, sometimes.
This guy, Joe.
There is no truth to that.
This guy, Joe, loves the ladies.
Joe's pretty incredible.
Yeah, the women were coming up at the theater, the ushers and everything, you know, really fawning over him, asking him, we got free Sprites, you know, and just had a grand old time with good old Joe Vento. Afterwards, we took a taxi back to our hotel.
Smart.
We'll point that out.
Smart.
I was glad to see when I looked him up today that he's still alive and he's not gotten into any car wrecks. And apparently still... playing at the Royal Resort 2 or 3 days a week. So
wow, and still taking tourists to see Pinup, I bet.
Anybody want to come with him?
Yeah, you want to see a show?
Want to see a show? The only other tidbit I have from my trip that I found interesting was the most money that I lost on the trip. Now, the most money I lost actually did not happen at the... it was at the... at the casino. It was not at a craps table. It was not at the roulette wheel. It was not at the sports book. It was actually at a Starbucks when I ordered a large coffee for myself, and then Big Tom was standing next to me. I said, Tom, can I get your drink for you? He's like, sure. He proceeded to order some kind of mocha drink with 5 ad shots, and the woman behind the counter said, alrighty, that'll be $17.21. And I had a small heart attack when she told me that. $17 for 2 cups of coffee. Are you kidding me?
That's really funny.
So that was my trip to Vegas. Good times. Laura, how was your week?
It was good. So you were gone, and our dogs, Nelson and Charlie, Nelson in particular, who's now laying at our side here.
Yeah, he's now a true pod dog.
He is
just
a
comes
pod
in
dog.
And lays down on the floor and hangs out and likes to listen to us record the show.
Mm-hmm. He was on red alert, so the terror alert was red in our home. He thought there was a clear, imminent danger,
credible threat
to the home.
Yes.
And so I didn't sleep very well because he was on high alert at night. As soon as the sun set, Nelson woke up.
The tail goes up.
And started just patrolling the home.
The neck goes on a swivel and he patrols, yes.
Yeah. So let's see, where to begin? So probably 11:30 Saturday night. And I'm still awake.
Still awake.
I'm reading my book that Tosca Lee sent me, which is the sequel to the book that I talked about last week.
Very nice of Tosca Lee.
It's called A Single Light. It is excellent.
Okay.
Really good. I actually read it in one day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I hear this commotion outside. First, I hear barking, tremendous barking, 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 barking. And usually it's just a car door, no problem. He goes back to sleep. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. They don't stop barking. And then I hear some booming noises, a few large bangs, some bangs.
Deep, sustained booming noises?
Like a deep boom, louder than a car door, but kind of similar to a car door, but something else beside a car door is going on out front.
Okay.
And the dogs act like there's home invaders with a crowbar, like at the door.
They're going
or
crazy.
An axe or something. Something's happening. So... get my glasses on, and I go, and I look outside, and there is a car in our front yard, and it's like on top of our mailbox, pretty much.
A car?
Yeah. And so we have a mailbox that my dad installed about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. He put the sucker into concrete. Like he was putting the fittings down for the Empire State Building. Like he set the concrete, he poured it in motion. My mom helped. Mm-hmm. I think I helped. So we had many hands.
Probably an entire 80 pound bag of sacrete.
Yeah.
Went into that hole.
Yeah. And it's a steel mailbox anyway, mm-hmm. on an enormous post, like an 8x8 post. Mm-hmm. And this mailbox, man, I mean, it's da bomb, as they say.
Is or was?
Well, I'll let you know. So I was like, oh, they're at the mailbox. I was kind of worried. I was like, oh, my dad's not going to like to hear this if his mailbox is destroyed.
And yeah, he took great pride in it.
Because he took some pride in it.
And thanks to Tom mm-hmm. for setting that up.
I mean, we had to pledge allegiance in front right before we the ribbon cutting ceremony.
It was a whole opening ceremony.
The mayor came.
We all were weeping.
We had cartoon size scissors, you know, for the ribbon.
That's right.
Yeah, the mailman showed up, the postman.
Uh-huh.
And
he left his hat. I'll never forget, though. He left his hat on during the whole ceremony.
He did. It was a little rude.
The wrong way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. Yep. So I get Sylvia. I was like, Sylvia, because she's still up too. Sylvia, come on out. Come out. Because I realize, oh, it's our neighbor's like 23-year-old daughter out front with another friend. And they right. have run the family's minivan into the mailbox on the front lawn. So I recognize her and I was like, okay, we'll go out and we'll help push. It's a little icy out front.
Now, how long did you spend staring out the window before deciding to go out and
not once I realized who it was and I needed Sylvia's corroboration that this was indeed this girl.
Okay. All right.
Once I realized it was her, I was mm-hmm. like, no problem. I'll go out and help.
Yeah. Let me see. So you put the shotgun back in the house.
Put the shotgun back. Exactly.
Hung it back on the rack. Underneath the other two.
You know, yeah. And so we went out, got our shoes on, and we're ready to push. So Christine, I'm just going to say her name. No, I won't say her last name.
Just say her name. Sure, Christine.
So Christine's out there. She's wringing her hands. She's really upset. She's apologizing for the mailbox. I look at the mailbox, mm-hmm. and I look at her minivan.
Uh-oh.
The yeah. parents' minivan.
And? Yes.
The minivan has a huge dent. Oh. A mailbox-shaped dent.
Now, Christine's parents, at this point, are they out of the house?
Oh, they're sound asleep. I guarantee you. Their house is dark.
Mm.
Has a mailbox-shaped dent in the back of it. And I look at our mailbox.
Yes.
And it is proud, standing strong, no scrape, no tilt, nothing. That mailbox did not move.
Lovely.
Did not
Tom
move.
Tom Lee. Let's give a big round of mm-hmm. applause to
That's
Tom
right.
Lee. There you go, Tom.
She could have Nicely backed done. Into our house
and done more,
and
damage,
done
to
more damage to the house than she did to our mailbox. Our house, our 1930s wood frame home would have crumbled if that minivan had hit it.
Now, I hope that her parents, I hope she told, I don't know, I wonder if she told them, but you know.
She did, because her mom came by the next morning.
Okay,
she
right.
said, I don't know if I should tell my mom tonight mm-hmm. or tomorrow morning. And I said, hey, tomorrow morning, I think works for her.
Well, I wonder if she told her father, Bill. And Bill, if you're listening, now remember Bill, Andrew, I think you were there when Bill told us he's seen every one of our podcasts, so we're not entirely sure of what that means, but he did claim to
yeah.
have seen and watched every one of our podcasts.
I could not believe it, though, and then I felt like I needed to apologize for the mailbox, and I even felt like slightly bad that the mailbox was like there.
Mm-hmm.
Mailbox didn't budge. Didn't
it's
budge.
It's a nice mailbox because it
I think
it
she
locks,
hit it
you know?
At least twice also because I heard at least two loud like booms, you know, that well, I think.
It was a sheet of ice out
there. A sheet of
the,
ice
on
out
the
there.
Road there.
And she slipped yeah. on it and came into the yard and then they got stuck. Mm. Yeah.
So funny you should mention that.
Oh, dear.
So I pulled in the night driving.
You are kidding me.
No, well, driving a Jeep. And so.
Did
and,
you hit our mailbox,
no,
Andrew?
But,
okay, good.
But what happened is it was strange. is I park in front of their house.
Yeah.
And I put the car in park.
They have the same Jeep you do, by the way.
I took my foot off the gas. And basically, the car started sliding backwards on the ice.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you know,
really?
Right there.
Yeah, yeah. It's still icy enough.
It's that same spot.
It's still icy enough. And what happens out here is it warms up during the day.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 65 degrees during the day.
But the ground
that
is
day.
Still cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so then it refreezes, and it is.
It's a hockey rink out there.
And,
yeah.
And it is. And like I said, Mike, and it's not a huge grade in front of your house.
No.
But like I said, it's slippery enough that my
That's
Jeep
so
was sliding backwards.
That's you, nuts.
You're stomping yeah. on the brake like, oh, slow down.
Well, and that's what I'm just thinking. You know, did I put it in reverse? What the hell's going on here?
Were you talking to your Jeep? Have you named your Jeep yet?
No, I haven't
Do
named
you name cars? Okay.
We've
named a couple, but I haven't
like we talk about it, like you know, ruby red or something for the truck, which is red. And,
okay,
but you know that's it.
Yeah,
we named our Jeep after a color, but then we realized we probably shouldn't be calling it that. When
it had come to us with a name. It was called Whitey.
Okay, mm-hmm. Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah, an African American gentleman that we bought it from in New York had named it Whitey, but he had named it Whitey after a Chicago White Sox player or coach.
Oh yeah,
Whitey. Really? It's a baseball.
I don't remember Whitey Herzog.
I remember the whole story.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah.
How about that? I think at one point though, I shouted something like, "We're gonna watch out before we kill Whitey."
We're talking about that.
And then I was
Whitey.
Like, "Wait a second! I heard it in that right context." And
that's
I was
true.
Like, "Well, probably should not be talking about our or calling our car Whitey."
Probably not. No.
I don't think that's an old time moniker. You know, Whitey Herzog, the manager of the Cardinals. I just don't think that's a nickname you hear every day.
No, you don't
anymore.
Older men,
Whitey. Yeah.
Like what's that guy's name?
Whitey Ford was a pitcher.
That 99-year-old that drove you guys around.
Joe Vento.
His
he
generation.
Probably knew a couple of Whiteys back.
His generation.
In the day, for
and
sure.
then yeah. like. If you're Irish, you call him Kelly or different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Whitey's actually a good friend of the family from St. Louis.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How old is he older?
Oh, he's older. And I can't imagine he'll be around much longer. But, on a first name basis, he's going on hunting trips and fishing trips with the family. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
There you go.
We've gone to the Cardinals game and Whitey's seen us. He's like, hey, come on and spend some time with us.
Come on over.
So how have you been, Andrew? Oh, by the way, Sylvia and I... with Christine, successfully got the minivan off the ice.
Oh, well done.
Her brother have to come and put his foot on the gas, though.
So hold on. Her brother wasn't helping to push? Her brother's like
he was
a
driving.
Strapping young man.
He was driving. So, I don't know. Who knows? I have a feeling that he was not happy with the way his sister had driven it and thought that he could get it off. But we had to come and push. So
I have a feeling he just didn't feel like pushing. That's what I feel.
Interesting.
So, you know, nothing too exciting to report in the old Dowd household.
No
so.
Terror alert with the dogs?
No, I mean, you know, we do a lot for Christmas inside and outside the house.
Mm-hmm. Are you taking it all down now?
Well, and we inside the house, we've taken everything down,
yep.
packed it up, put it back in the attic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've packed it with a little bit more care this time.
Oh.
Were there some broken items when you brought them down this year?
No, not broken items. It's just simply how much space they take in the attic. And, you know, and we had a lot of large bins. And so we kind of like condensed it down to smaller bins because the larger bins are so much harder to get in and out of storage.
I think you gave us some of your larger bins.
Yeah, we've got
they
more.
They are hard.
If you want more.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can only put so much in those. But
yeah.
They did. There's 17 plastic bins in the garage
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
So now one thing that is going on is, both Dashiell and Peter are doing science experiments.
Hmm.
And so
for school or just in general?
For school.
Okay.
And so
that's fun.
So mm-hmm. Dashiell's science experiment is he's taken 12 eggs and he's put them in different solution and he's observing different drinks.
That's awesome.
So Diet Coke, Coca-Cola.
That's such a fun experiment.
You know,
yeah.
pineapple juice, orange juice, cranberry juice.
Vodka.
No alcohol. I guess you could call these all soft drinks. And then basically observing what happens to eggs.
Cool.
You know, to kind of simulate human teeth or something.
Not hard boiled.
No, just eggs.
Just regular.
Are these the eggs from
your chicken's
from
eggs.
Your guys' chickens?
No, they're not going to waste their eggs on that.
Well, it isn't that, but we needed a consistent experiment.
Oh,
and
okay.
And we've got three different types of chickens.
Yeah.
And the eggs are different.
Yeah.
So we bought, you store-bought eggs to be consistent, of course, with the experiment.
Good,
so,
yeah.
But
yeah,
of course, you know, you want to control.
Control, that's yes. the word. I couldn't
but,
think of it
you know,
either.
One of the one of the interesting things is it seems like one of the most, let's just say, acidic substances seems to be the cranberry juice. You know,
that makes sense.
The cranberry juice without sugar.
Oh, really potent.
And you know, it makes you wonder. Now, I drink like half cranberry juice, half water. All the time.
It's supposed to be good for your bladder.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder.
Not to be gross.
I'm thinking it's a healthy drink. Well, when I see it basically, you know,
what it's doing to this egg,
dissolving
what
a hard
boiled
egg
stomach?
over a week. You know, you wonder. It's
what's
like,
happening to the egg in like, this cranberry juice?
It's like, you know, it's like the shell and stuff is basically descaling and things like that.
Really?
From the
cranberry. And it's not with the Coke?
You know, I haven't reviewed the full results, but the cranberry juice was the one that was the most
interesting,
the most
startling.
Astounding.
Huh.
The sugar-free cranberry juice. And then Peter has his experiment, which is we have some blinds. And one set of blinds we've coated with black paper, and the other set we've coated with white paper. and we're just observing the different solar effects, you know, from black blinds versus white colored blinds.
Cool.
Interesting.
Very cool.
What is your hypothesis?
Well, the hypothesis is that, you know, you could use a white coated blind to kind of cool a house, you know, and the black blinds could actually be used to heat the house. But, you know, it's fun going with the kids, and Dashiell is a born scientist.
Yeah, he seems like that to me.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything to him.
Mm-mm.
I mean, he's got a spreadsheet going.
Yeah, I can totally see that about him.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's taking his results.
Peter is a born mad scientist.
He's taking his observations.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, he's a little bit more nonchalant about the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, as far as working it, but I figure going through the whole process with the boys will be, you know, will be interesting.
Fantastic.
I mean, you know, a good learning experience with them.
You know, with all these life-size dolls you've got over there, I'm surprised that Peter didn't do an experiment on one of those guys. Like, I don't know how much he could scare a neighbor with
something like that.
Well, you know, there's always, I can tell you, well.
That's here, always going on, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you a story. So our neighbor has a dog that's a, you know, a large, like, labradoodle,
mm-hmm.
completely black, head to toe. And so every once in a while, that thing jumps the fence and comes into our yard.
And he's
a good dog, but he's kind of like calm, doesn't show a lot of emotion,
okay.
right? Like he's happy. I mean, but now he's drugged. He is on like Prozac or something. Like, oh, yeah. So he's, because he has so many hyper issues that he's kind of like.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So anyways, this week.
Sure, he might not have just found your neighbor's wife's stash.
No. Okay. Because to keep him from tearing up the house.
That's really
right?
funny.
And hurting himself, he is strongly medicated.
Oh my
and so,
I didn't realize they
like
did that.
Doggy psychologist,
and this is not a. Yeah. I mean, this is not an unusual thing.
Yeah, no, it probably isn't. I just
Our vet tried to give Nelson
Xanax
for the fireworks because he goes crazy during the fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is I go to let my little 20-pound dog out because they're both on diet, so they're getting smaller. So I go to let Raven out.
Incredible shrinking dogs.
Yep. And I open the door, and the next thing I know, you know, this 70-pound black lab just comes bursting into the house.
Oh, man.
It's pitch blackout, right?
What?
It's pitch blackout, right? So you don't expect it.
No, you don't expect it.
So it's like, holy cow here. So that's...
Who's coming in here?
That's Buster that's come over and visit. But, you know, speaking of being scared, so
that
of
would,
course,
yeah.
Peter put on a nice little Halloween costume. So when the neighbors came back to get Buster,
he
jumped
you,
out from behind the door and
got him good
and showed them what for.
That would have startled me to no end if I opened the door to let Nelson or Charlie in and another dog comes in.
Yeah.
Especially a big dog, like that type of dog.
Yeah. I mean, all black. And the next, I mean, it's in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Huh.
And we've got wild animals. I mean, coyotes and mountain lions.
All kinds
of
stuff out here.
And, you know, bobcats. I mean, so.
Yeah. Bears even.
Oh, yeah. 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 So it's like, you know, we're pretty careful when it comes to opening that back door.
Yeah.
Well, clearly not very careful.
You can't see him if he's a black dog.
You need a light out there.
And we do have lights.
You're right. You got the Highline Canal right there.
We got a spotlight out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wanted to give a big thank you to Tosca Lee, who's a writer that I reviewed one of her books last week.
Yep, The Line Between.
That's right. Thanks, Steve.
Yep.
And she sent me, and I got it in 2 days. This is so cool. So I reviewed it, and then the next day, almost the next day, it felt like I got the sequel to the book that I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
And I read this book in the one night. So I was busy reading this when our neighbor... basically ran into our mailbox.
You had to curtail your reading, thanks to Christine.
That's right. That's right. And it's called A Single Light, and this is post-apocalyptic. Don't they know it's the end? And this book satisfies my inner prepper to a point where it made me just so happy. Seriously considered getting a water straw, like a filtration straw.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Any types of MREs, food.
You go out to the store, buy a bunch of canned beans.
No, not the cans, because cans do go bad.
You want the dried beans.
You need the stuff that doesn't really, you just add a little bit of water to it.
Right.
Yeah.
I did notice the bathtubs were all filled up with water when I got back. I didn't know what the hell was going on there, but now I see why.
These books are so good.
Awesome.
Though. Yeah.
All right, cool. Tosca Lee, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it.
A Single Light, highly recommended.
The Inside Club.
All right, so we're going to pull the curtain back just a scotch for a second to let you know that Andrew...
Heavy, heavy curtain.
It is a massive curtain. My shoulder is still
velvet.
A little bit.
It's forest green.
Blue velvet.
Oh, no, forest green.
Is,
okay. You want blue?
I pictured it as velvet blue.
You and all of my interior design clients.
Well, you know, it's just from the David Lynch movie.
Okay.
Anyway, Andrew, for all his self-proclaimed martyrdom, who spent, I don't know how many hours on the show talking about how he, had a work over Christmas. Oh, I had to go in Christmas Eve. I was working Christmas Day. Well,
there's a lot of humble bragging.
If you heard this sound a few seconds ago, or that sound, what that was Andrew Dowd fleeing the basement as he is on his way to Cabo for his little getaway, his little vacay. So we did pre-record his review and my review earlier, so you will hear that in just a little bit. But we're going to charge ahead with the rest of the program, and we are going to bring you, well, you know what? Let's just start with the
We're going to martyr ourselves.
We're going to make sure that you know about it, and Andrew will find out about it at some point. So let's start it with the YA shout out. And Laura,
it's not Laura.
That's right. Dave, what do you have for the YA shout out? Well, listen, I am so excited to be handed over the reins of the YA shout out for this week. And man, do I have a good one. Now, this was my absolute favorite book growing up, and I must have read this book about 50 times. The title is called, now this is a great title.
Right.
If I ever wrote a book, I would want a title half as good as this title. It is The Snark Out Boys and the Avocado of Death.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is written by Daniel Pinkwater. So you might recognize that name. I believe
NPR.
I've heard him on NPR before. Uh-huh.
Yep.
So this book is a gleefully insane, deranged, fun read. It's for ages, I guess I would say ages 10 to 110. It's about, seriously,
okay.
It is about a couple of high school boys who meet up with some deranged lunatics, including a singing, listen to this lineup here, and tell me if you couldn't get behind a book like this. You've got a singing chicken. You've got a kidnapped chimpanzee. You've got orangutans who wrestle. And you've got a Chinese butler named Hines.
Yeah,
now, how can you not get behind something like that?
Sounds really good.
So these boys invent a sport called snarking out, which basically means you sneak out late at night to watch B-movies at the local theater, and you eat baked potatoes dripping with butter at underground shopping centers. Now, listen, let me tell you something about that. All my life, I've been searching for a baked potato half as good as the baked potato that Pinkwater writes about here.
Hmm.
He describes it, from what I remember, he describes this kid, and they're out, they're snarking out late one night, and he sees a little vendor selling baked potatoes wrapped in foil. It's like, these look good. The key is that the guy takes his thumb, sticks it down in the middle of the baked potato, like the long end of it, then smears a huge slab of butter down there, sprinkles salt and pepper on it, wraps it with a tinfoil or a napkin or what have you, and you walk around eating it with the butter just oozing and dripping down onto you.
Huh.
It's just the way he writes about food in this book, particularly that baked potato, is just so good, so memorable. This is a really fun one. What else you got in there? You got space realtors, you've got evil criminal masterminds. This is a cult classic book. A lot of people claim this is one of their favorites of all time. You can count me among them. This is The Snark Out Boys and the Avocado of Death by Daniel Pinkwater. And man, it is a lot of fun.
Sounds so great, dude.
That is your YA shout out. Well, let's open it up. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, go ahead. Let's start it off.
Laura Medicus.
All right, so I have When You See Me by Lisa Gardner. I really enjoyed this book. It weirdly reminded me of my youth.
Oh.
I know. And here's why. This is a book.
Were you crying or laughing?
Well, I'm going to say something bizarre here. Here's why. This is a book involving a serial killer.
Oh, well, of course, okay. Natural. So naturally, it reminded me of your youth. Yes.
But I don't read a lot of serial killer books anymore. But when I was a young adult, I was addicted to Patricia Cornwell's books with Kay Scarpetta. Oh,
the Scarpetta novels, yes. I threw through those as well. Good stuff.
I just went through them, loved them. And I loved reading about profilers. All of that kind of stuff was just, it was so fantastic. Absolutely, couldn't get enough.
Right.
But at a certain point, and I was reflecting on this when I wrote my review, it's probably been about 10 years or so, the serial killer genre kind of started to bother me. And
When you read 50 of them over a 50-day period, you can kind of get burned out.
Maybe that's true. And hopefully I don't do that to my beautiful post-apocalyptic novels.
No, you don't want to do that.
It's possible, though.
Anything is possible. You never know what could happen.
Someday we'll hear the whole song.
Someday we will play it at the end of the show.
But for me, it started happening. Maybe I'm woke now, to use that tired word. But I think it happened with books where it seems like the writer might be getting off a little bit about writing.
It is ironic, isn't it, that you used to just reference the word woke and described it as being tired.
Oh, that is ironic. I didn't think about that.
But you're right. That's all you hear nowadays. Oh, I'm woke. He's woke. We're woke. Let's get woke. Especially teaching at the school where I teach.
Oh, really? You hear that?
Teachers use this way too often. It is so overused.
I try not to use it. The last year, I've been trying to.
Let's all be woke. Yeah.
I've been trying to get it out of my vocabulary.
Well, we got a teacher at our school. Yeah. The kids were complaining about it to me the other day. And he doesn't listen to the show, so I can go ahead and talk about it.
I saw your eyes thinking about it.
I did. You see that?
I saw that.
I thought about it, but you know what? I don't have any problem telling it to his face, and I'll do so in a joking manner. But the kids are like, man, I can't deal with this anymore. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, well, Mr. So-and-so, anytime I try to say anything to him, he's like, well, you know, as a white cis male, I can't really relate to that, but...
Oh.
And so everything, like the first thing out of his mouth...
What does cis mean?
It means straight. Cis.
Oh, why is it cis?
I try not to get involved in all that lingo, so I'm not exactly sure. It's CIS, someone who identifies with the gender of their birth sex.
And
that's what cisgender is, according to this website, dictionary.com, whatever.
What a crazy website that is.
If you want to go ahead and believe it, go ahead and believe it, but I don't know. So that's cis is short for cisgender.
So his excuse for not understanding anything is because he identifies with his gender.
So I'm like, you can't talk to the kids now just because you can talk. They want to talk to you. You know, kids want to.
Yeah.
They want you, whether or not you can relate to their situation. Who cares? They just want someone to talk to.
That's really funny.
They might have nine.
They really do.
They might have nine siblings at home and an overworked mother and an absentee father. So they would love to have an adult male to talk to you, whether or not whatever your gender is
or color.
What have you, or color.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but every word out of his as a white cis male, I don't know if I can. It's like,
so he's further separating himself. But the thing is, he probably doesn't mean to. He means the
exact opposite by doing that. But no, he's just driving a wedge between himself and the kids by doing that kind of thing. It's like, no, come on, you're too woke. You know, you're way too woke here, guys. Step off the woke ledge. Let's crawl down from that woke ledge and maybe just be oak. How about that? Can we be oak? We can all be one big oak tree together. I don't know.
That's really funny,
and
Dave.
And hang from the branches. Let's not tie
a noose.
This metaphor is getting way
too far away from me.
Let's get back to your lighter side and serial killers.
10 years ago, maybe I woke up, Dave.
Okay, right.
And started being aware that in some of these serial killer books, it seems like the writer, maybe not the writer, who knows, they got off on writing about a woman being sexually assaulted or murdered.
Right.
And I am not into that. Don't want to be into that. I don't like reading about it. And I want to be clear that this book by Lisa Gardner is not that way all.
Yeah, it did seem to reach a saturation
level. I'm a little overly sensitive to that.
It
still happens too, and I'll pick up a book.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, like, and I'm like, I can't read this. Cannot read this. That is not this book.
Okay, that is really good to know.
This book brought me back to the classic profiler manhunt type of stories. Strong female lead. These are women who are professionals. They're focused. They're constantly thinking about how to catch a serial killer. This story.
And who can forget that TV show?
I loved Profiler. I loved Profiler.
Not the prof, but the prof.
No.
What the hell was her name? Ashley Bacon. No, that was her character's name.
I don't know, Dave. I'm sure someone knows.
Continue.
So this story is three fantastic female leads, and each chapter is from the woman's perspective. And I haven't read a Lisa Gardner book before, but I will after reading this book. But these are characters from her other novels, so you don't need to have read the other books in order to enjoy this.
Great.
This is a standalone if you want it to be. I just started in. I wasn't confused at all. I was ready to go. So one woman, Flora, is a serial killer survivor. Someone who has survived a serial killer, which is interesting.
That is not something you hear about every day.
No, and she's a civilian vigilante now. And is dealing with major PTSD, as you can imagine.
Yes.
Another is an FBI agent named Kimberly, who's in charge. She's struggling a little bit with the responsibility of leading this task force. And also, let me say this.
Yes.
She's struggling in a normal, healthy way that you do as you get further into your career. It's a natural progression. And it's something I identified with and I liked about this character. And I have a pet peeve. I feel like this whole review is filled with Laura's pet peeves.
A lot of pet peeves going on.
I have a pet peeve for female narrators who are overly flawed for the sake of relatability. It really annoys me.
Right.
But this character did not feel that way. She felt very real to me.
Okay.
There's also a Boston police detective named Dee Dee who she provides the book with good old-fashioned detective work. So she's the detective in the book.
Is that D-I-D-I or D-E-E?
It's D-D, capitals.
Oh, just D-D.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I had problems because I kept thinking D-D was like initials for like some special police sergeant or lieutenant or corporal.
Yeah.
But eventually I trained my brain into just seeing it as D-D.
Okay.
But I don't know that other people would. So I love the setup of this book. I like what the different personalities and skill sets. I like that they brought that to the table. There's also a fourth person who we alternate with as well, but she's a young victim, and I don't want to give anything away about her, but her voice adds a fantastic dose of urgency to the work that the other three women are doing. So you realize as a reader, when you have this fourth voice who's a victim, that these other three women need to figure this situation out, and they need to do it quickly. Okay. This is a great story about old bones found off of a hiking trail in the hills of Georgia, off of the Appalachian Trail.
Oh.
Have you ever hiked the Appalachian Trail?
Segments of it, for sure.
Segments of it, right? I feel like I have too.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. You have too. Well, it goes all the way from Georgia to Maine. So
yeah, yeah.
I know we've hiked certain stretches in New York, and I feel like a lot of it is in the White Mountains in New Hampshire as well. So yeah,
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So
the AT, the symbol, you can still see the dash and the A goes across to form the top part of the letter T.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if Lisa Gardner's hiked it. I know we get to talk to her. We have a chance to talk to her coming up soon.
Yes, indeed.
And looking forward to asking her about that. But I'm in awe of what she pulled off with these four women's voices in this story. Really complex, but it didn't seem complex. It seemed simple.
That's a lot of narrators.
It's a lot of narrators.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Just really loved it. It's an excellent book. I think anyone who enjoys a serial killer, detective, profiler type of book would absolutely love this. And it is called When You See Me by Lisa Gardner.
Very nice. And that is Allie Walker as the...
Oh, Allie Walker.
Also, second time we've referenced her on the show.
That's true. Mm-hmm. You mean today?
No, not today. No.
Oh.
In the previous 50
I feel like it's been more
episodes.
Than two.
Probably so. You're right. Many Ashley Bacon references as well. All right. Very good. That's referenced and recommended and reviewed by...
See what happens when Andrew leaves us and lays on a beach in Cabo.
While he's lying on the beach, I'm going to just go ahead and jump straight into the... Because let's face it, by the time we get to the audiobook, Andrew's asleep anyway.
That's true.
I'm going to dive right in to my...
Andrew powers down after he's given his review.
He does. All right. Discuss the search. You're online looking for an audiobook to read, checking the usual places, getting suckered down the usual rabbit holes. Before you know it, hours have gone by and you've ordered a Denver Nuggets mug and learned more than you ever needed to know about Quentin Tarantino's record collection. Suddenly... you see a book cover that stops you in your tracks. A balding, hastily scrawled caricature of a man with an elongated, twisting arm holds a glass of whiskey that doubles as the letter O in the title of the book, which is Ablutions. This title piques your interest as well. You glance at the description for the book, which reads in part, quote, "In a famous but declining Hollywood bar town, a barman works. Morbidly amused by the decadent decay of his surroundings, he watches the patrons fall into their nightly oblivion, making notes for his novel. Your curiosity is no longer simply piqued. It is standing at attention and screaming for you to sate it." Discuss the tense. This book is written in second person, POV, and initially you're not sure if this can be sustained over the course of this short novel. Mm-hmm. You find out that not only can it be done, but it can be done well, so well in fact, that you find yourself seeking out other second person novels. Discuss the narrator. This book is narrated by the author, which gives you pause. Not literally. You haven't started listening yet. You've listened to more than one author butcher their own work, but you give it a shot anyway. His name is Patrick DeWitt, and his dry, deadpan reading style echoes the desperation at play in this book, the frustrated loneliness and long-suffering, empty searching of the characters. You find it hypnotic and haunting. It is unlike any other narration you've listened to, and you realize how perfect it is for this book. And cannot imagine anyone else narrating this sucker. Discuss the book. You were drawn into this world of barflies and nightlife, seeping and dripping in this saturated, honeyed hue of a whiskey oak barrel. You were mesmerized by these tales of woe, of oh no, of oh hell no. You find yourself laughing at times, despite yourself, in spite of yourself. Each chapter begins with the word discuss, followed by the topic the narrator discusses.
Laura starts to understand this podcast review.
Amazing. And you were drawn into this world. Hook, line, and highball. Discuss your recommendation. You decide to write your recommendation in second-person POV as well, despite the fact that you feel it is kind of hack to write a review in the same style as the book itself.
Never.
Still, you cannot help it, and you find yourself addicted to writing in this manner. You wonder if you might need counseling. Instead, you simply play a clip from the book.
Discuss the regulars. They sit in a line like ugly, huddled birds, eyes wet with alcohol. They whisper into their cups and seem to be gloating about something. You will never know what. Some have jobs, children, spouses, cars, and mortgages, while others live with their parents or in transient motels and are on government assistance, a curious balance of classes particular to the parts of Hollywood devoid of Klieg lights and make-believe. There are sometimes limousines at the curb out front. Other nights feature police cars and ambulances and vicious street scenarios. The bar interior resembles a sunken luxury liner of the early 1900s, mahogany and brass, black burgundy leather coated in dust and ash. It is impossible to know how many times the ownership has changed hands.
Discuss reaction. Days later, you're still thinking about this audiobook. This is an experience to be savored, to be devoured, to be inhaled, like three airplane bottles of Jameson whiskey. But there will be no hangover, just the unadulterated admiration ringing in your now addled brain that's forcing you to glance askance at strangers and give them the once-over once more. This is Ablutions, and this is written and narrated by Patrick DeWitt. And this was your
audiobook of the week.
There you go.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Second person, eh?
He's second person. It was great. It was great.
I wonder if he had trouble sustaining that, and I also wonder if he started talking like that, like to his family.
I bet he did. There's no way. I don't know how you couldn't do it. You find yourself doing it all the time.
Really?
I just did it right there.
I heard. I'm not that. Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Interesting.
Perhaps. Yep. It's a really good one, though. Seriously, in all seriousness. And I did write that review seriously. It is a fantastic, fantastic book. All right. So now we will continue on with the rest of the show from before, featuring
Ooh.
Andrew Dowd, the Inside Flap.
Okay, the book that I'm going to recommend this week is called The Smiling Man. Now, The Smiling Man is written by Joseph Knox. Now, this is a gritty noir thriller. This exposes the seedy underbelly of Manchester, England, with large doses of smart-ass, sarcastic, dark humor to be found, especially from the main character in snide asides he dispenses, not only at the hands of the other characters, but in his descriptions as well. Now, I really enjoyed this one. It grabs you immediately with the very first line in the book, which is this. It started with a knock at the door. Is that, that's not Paige Turner, but I'm sure Paige Turner would be happy to come in here and talk about this one.
Now, did they say if it was it one Turner. Knock? Was it two knocks?
Well, I mean, they did like, not, I mean, you know, Joseph Knox did not say, he just said a knock. So you're right. Maybe it is just a.
Now, that would be creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the person knocking on the door is a young boy. Now, this young boy is chilled to the bone from the rain. He is shoeless. The occupants of the house who answered the knock are described as an old man and an old woman. And the boy just stands there shivering, not saying anything. So the old couple obviously are very concerned. They want to bring him in. And just as they open the door to let him in, suddenly a muscular figure steps out of the shadows holding a claw hammer in a gloved hand. He uses his other hand to tousle the boy's hair and gives him a coin for a good job.
This is exactly what Nelson thought was going to happen.
The older couple are surprised at this. Mm-hmm. But then they go from being taken aback to being taken to the back. And we hear wet thuds of something hitting the ground and low moans and a gurgle and a word or two and then another blow and then silence as the young boy clutches his shiny coin in his hand.
Joseph Knox knows how to start a book.
I mean, that's how you start off a book, right? So from there, we go to the main character, Aiden Watts, and most of the story is told from him, but we do flash back to that young boy and that strange man, and as the book progresses, we learn a little bit more about the boy and the man each time, and the storylines intertwine, and when I found out the denouement of that particular storyline, I got chills, so it was another book that gave me
chills.
No tears. Tears That's of good. Sadness when it was over, but no tears.
I'd be worried if you're crying every week over your
That's
books.
That's true. Yes. We might want to call somebody if that's happened.
So how long did you practice pronouncing denouement?
Not at all. I'm a drama teacher.
You just went for it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So from there, we jump to the main character, Aiden Watts. He is a detective. Now, this guy... This book also reminded me a lot of Ken Bruin's books. You know, I'm a big Ken Bruin fan. Mm-hmm. Here's another detective with a troubled past, some missteps in his past, some drug issues. He's been placed on the night shift, you remember? And you'll remember, famously, McNulty having to ride the boat in season 2 of The Wire for pissing off his bosses. Well, much like this, Aiden Watts now has to work with this guy.
Back-to-back episodes. Last episode, we mentioned somebody from The Wire, Brody, I believe.
No, there we go.
Now we're doing Bodie. It again.
Poor Bodie.
Brody.
Not Brody. So, he's partnered up with this guy that nobody wants to work with, this guy Peter Sutcliffe, who they just called him Sutty, and this guy is just a miserable human being who hates everybody and everything, and just compulsively wipes, maybe I should have practiced pronouncing compulsively, wiping down everything with hand sanitizer and alcohol and one of these kind of germaphobes.
But what's that guy's name that does that?
So his nickname is Sutty. They just call him Sutty.
No, the celebrity.
Howie Mandel.
Howie Mandel, yeah.
I think there's probably a lot of celebrities that are germaphobes.
True. Yeah, probably. Now, the main mystery in this book concerns the titular smiling man.
Oh, filled with big words tonight.
So, the smiling man is a man who is found dead in a hotel. Now, this hotel has been shuttered for some time as the owners are in an acrimonious marriage dispute. And they've shut the hotel. It's an abandoned hotel. But the night watchman discovers something going on. The detectives come and they find this smiling man. He's a man who is found dead. Now, the tags have been removed from his clothing. His teeth have been filed down and replaced. And he has no fingerprints, and yet he is smiling. So that is what the mystery is concerned here. Who is this man?
You say his teeth have been filed down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Now, I think it would be more practical to just pull the teeth out, right? Than to file them down.
Take a file and very carefully file each tooth down.
Well, let's think about this.
Let's file them down, but I think it would be easier just to remove the teeth.
I agree. Yeah. But however, when you say the teeth are filed down, I get a little creeped out.
Yeah, it's creepier. And also, as someone who has had teeth pulled from his
mouth,
it is not the easiest process. And I've watched my dentist shake and grab his shoulder. In fact, my dentist had to retire. 1 month, I got a letter in the mail. The poor guy had shoulder issues, and he couldn't even, he said he couldn't go, couldn't get it fixed. Debilitating shoulder issues from yanking teeth. Had to retire because of shoulder problems.
When, and this is something that we've got a friend who is a
my mouth is open.
A heart surgeon, and he would have to stand up performing surgeries, you know, for hours and hours on end.
Uh-huh.
But but he had to retire because basically he had debilitating back issues.
Yeah, you don't think about these physical ailments.
Yeah, but
because you're probably bent over at like an uncomfortable.
Well, and you have to, even if you're not comfortable, you have to.
No, it doesn't matter.
You have to maintain that position. But it is no, you know, it is no joking matter. As far as some of these surgeons and dentists.
Wow. An interior designer, sometimes my neck hurts when I draw floor plans.
As a teacher, sometimes my voice hurts when I'm trying to talk over all my students.
Andrew, as a computer guy?
Well,
eye strain.
And so I studied ergonomics as far as computer, but you know, the height of your monitor is extremely critical because, you know, if you're looking down, it puts more strain on your neck. And you kind of want to be looking up at like a 5-degree angle.
You want to look up?
Yeah, you want to look up. And so you want the top of the monitor to kind of be almost like even with the top of your head. But if you feel it, but I've had debilitating neck problems, but it really comes down to it's adjusting your monitor.
That's why you see Andrew when he gets on his laptop, he lays flat on his back on the living room carpet, places the laptop on his chest.
I always wondered why he did that.
You wondered, now you know why.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I need to check my email. And then he starts laying down on the floor. I'm like, I don't know what this...
But and so we're sitting here at the table, and Dave and Laura's laptops are both a good foot lower than their eyes.
Possibly more.
But again, that is absolutely...
Getting a podcast.
That's an awful place. Now you can actually
my neck hurts right now.
You can actually buy a shelf that your computer can sit on.
My gosh, you're killing me right
now. I'm gonna lean back.
I'm hurting so bad.
To basically fix the ergonomics. But this is, you know, this is one thing is, well, I worked in Europe and workplace ergonomics was a very serious issue.
Really?
In Europe. Absolutely.
It is not at all here.
But and it isn't here. And I work in all these major corporations, and the thing is people have got all kinds of issues with carpal tunnel.
Oh, I
and
hit
all,
carpal tunnel
all this
at,
stuff.
At a job, yeah.
And people don't pay attention to the monitors of the workplace, but it makes a big difference.
Hmm. Well, I tried just now leaning back and grabbing the mic in my hand,
almost
but
fell
I
down.
Can't. I almost fell down. I can't access my
I actually just propped my laptop.
Sound
I don't
effects.
Really need it. I have it at the go here in case I need to Google something, but.
Now, it's hard enough to yank someone's teeth, by the way, getting back to it, because I know you guys were wondering about when my teeth were yanked out of my... Well, before we get back to that for 1 second, when you yank someone's tooth out, usually there's a reason you're yanking out, and usually that's because that tooth is decayed and rotten. So, therefore, when you go to yank it out, it doesn't just come out in one nice fell swoop. It crumbles and splinters and fissures in the pair of pliers. So he doesn't, now he's got to get in there and get the little stubby parts out of the bottom.
So you're telling me it's easier to file.
So perhaps what I'm saying is it might just be easier to take a little filer and file them down.
Okay. I'm going to note to self on that.
Yeah. So that's the smiling man. Now, this is not the only case that our detective Aiden has to deal with here. He's a flawed cop, but an interesting one who finds that his past is always rearing its ugly head. But he is a guy you definitely do root for him to succeed despite the overwhelming odds against him. The dialogue, I like the dialogue in this book. The dialogue just crackles. It's fast. It's smart. It's got the right blend of sneers and smears that you're looking for in your police noir. As well, this book also has the necessary violence that I always appreciate.
Thank goodness.
This is a very atmospheric novel, heavy in tone, and the deeply dark noirish mood. Now, although much of the novel We're talking about the smiling man here, so I like to deliver this review with a smile on my face. As you can see, I'm smiling.
Oh, yeah. It's impossible always to
talk when you're... deals with the central mystery of what happened to this smiling man. This is very much a character-driven novel, and you really get to know this character of Aiden as everything appears through his eyes, and it's just as much as it is the story of the mystery, which I always appreciate it when an author takes the time to really just develop the character as much as he does. This is a another story where the main character is just trying to work the case, but his bosses don't want him on it. They just want him investigating some dumpster fires. This book is packed with multiple storylines that always keep you involved and guessing as to what's going to happen. It's bleak and noir in all the right ways. Check it out. This is The Smiling Man by Joseph Knox, and that is recommended by
Dave Medicus.
There you go. Andrew, what do you have for us this week?
So, when I said I read about 10 books this last week, mm-hmm. I was not exaggerating.
Really?
Might have been.
Yeah, and wow. So, you know, and what it really came down to is I read through three different science fiction series. So last week, I reviewed a book, and so
I
continued to read books in that series. Huh. Then I happened upon this book.
Okay.
And there are 5 books in the series, so I quickly plowed through them.
Wow.
And then I found another book, and I read three more books.
Good grief.
Yeah. So
I thought you were exaggerating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too.
Not exaggerating. And so, you know, every once in a while it happens, and you know, I kind of hit a patch, and you know, and I need something to kind of take my mind off of the off the politics mm-hmm. and the lunacy that's going on at work.
This is why we read fiction.
This is why we do a mm-hmm. podcast.
Yeah, but you know, so in these phases, I read myself to sleep. I'll wake up at 3 a.m. You know, and when I wake up, I wake up. So I read a little bit more, go back to sleep. Mm. You know, it is what it is.
I read myself to sleep too.
Yeah. We definitely read ourselves to sleep.
So this book.
Actually, I make Dave read to me to sleep.
Yeah, right.
Well, last night I was into the Nuggets game, so I watched the Nuggets game, and I was so tired from that.
No, you
Vegas
slept
trip,
through
so
pretending to watch
slept
the Nuggets
through the
game.
Fourth quarter at the Nuggets game. Yeah. This is true.
And Dave, did anything specific happen? Anything memorable happen?
Well, he scored 46 points, and that's why I wanted to watch that. I wanted to watch that fourth quarter.
Oh, 46 points. Is that a low number?
the most points scored
yes, Dave.
By a center on the road since Shaquille O'Neal.
Really?
Way back in the day, yeah. Hmm. So it was a pretty big deal.
Okay.
Not that anyone out there who's listening cares.
Well, no, I don't think so.
I did hear that on the news, and I'm like,
oh, there you go.
Yep, I know that the Medicuses are all over this.
I was, and yeah. I was.
So, nope. So this book is called Starship Sakira.
Hmm.
And if you Google,
how do you spell that?
Sakira. Oh. Now be careful because Google wants to turn this into Starship Shakira. and it actually comes up with some interesting photos there.
Oh, I'm familiar with Shakira.
But this is the Delphi in Space series. Hmm. The author is Bob Blanton. Blanton.
Hmm.
And it is a near future Earth series. And this book is fast paced. You know, it takes liberty with physics and things like that. And I've read some reviews and they're like, well, this book, it was an enjoyable read, but it takes liberties with the second law of thermodynamics. Mm. And you know, and they talk about, you know,
Nerd alert.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when you read science fiction, you do have to suspend your, you know, your belief in some things, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it is. I do like to read science fiction that's somewhat realistic, and things like that. And this book, you know, does have hard science. And so the premise of this book is there's a gentleman named Mark, and his brother Blake, and he has a 12-year-old daughter named Katie, Catie. And so the book opens, and Mark is out exploring a cave deep underwater, and he happens to discover a spaceship.
Wow.
Or did the spaceship discover him? I mean, that's the question. And
sounds like a dream of Andrew Dowd's.
Well, and these guys are off the coast of Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
And they are on a big luxury yacht.
Again, Andrew Dowd.
Yeah, I would go for that. And so, Mark is a mathematician and a scientist, and he has developed an algorithm. And this algorithm, he has basically made a deal with the government. And he said, this algorithm will let you predict which boats are smuggling drugs. And so the government said, well, you know, we're not really going to pay much for that. And Mark's like, well, how about this? You give me 10% of all the drugs, you, or not drugs, but 10%
the money.
Of money of all the drugs that you capture within 6 months. Right. And so it turns out that his algorithm is very good. And he ends up making enough money, and they don't actually want to give him the money. So they're like, well, how about we give you one of these boats that we seized and a little bit of money? And so he goes for that. And so they end up with this, like, you know, 80-foot or 100-foot yacht. And, you know, that's rent. So his next venture is Mark has discovered a way to create more accurate sonar. And so he's developed the technology, and they are out testing this technology. And in one of the test sites, I believe it is test site number 3, he has detected some anomalies. And so he's just getting ready to publish his results. And he's like, well, I've got to go see what this is. So of course, Mark has also invented a, you know, a deep sea, you know, like a rebreather apparatus. Now, you know what a rebreather is?
No.
Yeah. So when you breathe scuba, it takes air from the tank, you breathe it in, and then you spit it back out and bubbles come up.
Okay.
I knew that.
Not a very efficient system. Because, you know, what happens is when you breathe in oxygen, you basically are only taking a couple percent of oxygen out of the air, and then you're exhaling it.
But you're exhaling whatever, dioxide, right?
As well.
Kill you.
Yeah. But with the rebreathers, they have the ability to recirculate that air.
Oh.
So it's much more efficient.
Huh.
You know, and they truly are rebreathers, and they don't put bubbles in there, and you can stay underwater longer and things like that. So anyways, so he's down diving, and the next thing he knows, he gets taken aboard an alien spaceship, and there is probing of a sort that is involved here.
Always the alien probing.
We need a song for Andrew's kind of space opera stuff.
So a bizarre science fiction alien probing song.
All right, that's also the that's going to be the new drop for Andrew.
Yeah. So basically, what happens
they're
is
coming to take me away, They're coming to take me away.
Not quite.
So basically, Mark is being tested for altruism.
Beam me aboard.
Energize.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, beam me up, Scotty.
And
so that's the way I feel at work these days. I don't talk about where I work, but man, I wish somebody would beam me the hell out of there.
Yeah, really? Yeah,
that's a different
thing. That sounds like a story for next week.
Yeah. So anyways, they test Mark for altruism because the reason this flying saucer is there is that, and the its name is Sakura.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yep.
All I can think about is Shakira.
Shakira.
And Google wants to push you in that.
I saw that as soon as I typed it in.
Yeah, I did too.
Damn Google.
Yeah.
And so basically,
Dave's looking up Shakira now. Yeah,
Hips Don't Lie. That's her most famous song.
Yeah.
Because this spaceship is here for good reasons, and it basically has brought all this technology and knowledge to Earth. Because the aliens basically who sent this thing to Earth realized that Earth needs help, that Earth is going to destroy itself, right? And they know have mathematical models and stuff like that, and they have history to basically guide them, and that we basically need to aggressively move to a society that is less destructive, right? And it's one of the reasons that the spaceship is there, but they have to find a human who they can trust. To basically do the right things with this technology and this capability. And so Mark is that person.
Yeah.
And there you go, Mark.
Mark's brother Blake is he is a military veteran. He's a former pilot. And he, you know, I guess got a Navy cross because he sacrificed himself, you know, in a conflict. And so he's like physically scarred, lost an eye, things like that. And then his daughter Katie is a brilliant 12-year-old. You know, has a photographic memory, is extremely smart. And so she comes to, Mark and his wife are divorced. And so Katie comes to spend the summer with her dad in Hawaii. I mean, what 12-year-old wouldn't love to go and spend a summer?
I mean, what
hanging out?
What anyone would want to go out, spend hanging a out summer in yacht, Hawaii? Yeah, I take it.
Scuba diving and things like that. So
yeah.
So that's the premise of the book.
Feel sorry for the ex-wife,
and
who lives in Cleveland.
Well, so And you know, and there's some discussion there with the ex-wife who actually lives in San Diego.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's not so far away.
Yeah. But so this is where the book starts off. It starts with the premise. Mark gets a hold of this technology and quickly starts to build a I don't know what you call this, a and I see I've read all five books, so I've got to make sure I kind of stick with the first book.
Don't give any spoilers away now.
But he starts to build a business around all this technology, right? And so some of the as far as some of the places for the technology, some of the areas for the technology are there's a compute an artificial intelligence extremely smart.
Mm-hmm.
They call it ADI or AD.
Okay.
Right? And but it's an artificial intelligence extremely smart, extremely capable. But there are fabricators on the ship. And so the fabricators can pretty much make anything you want. Hmm. These fabricators can make it. Technology, there's energy technology, there's fusion, there are improved types of solar cells, there are superconductors. They have, you know, high performance spaceships and fighter craft on there. You know, plasma.
Hey, Andrew.
Plasma, yes.
Let's say you discovered, kind of like Dave was discovered the 99-year-old guy in Vegas. Let's say you discovered someone from outer space and they said, hey, I got something for you to see. Come with me. Would you hop in the spaceship? Like, seriously, would you do it? Would you hesitate? Would you think? Or would you say no?
You know, I would have to trust my instincts and the time and the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if they're standing there and, you know, in the door of the spaceship,
mm-hmm.
and they've got this big, long alien probe, and they're looking at me like...
And they're holding a book that says, How to Serve Man.
Yeah. I'm probably not going to go for it, but if I'm sitting at a bar,
yeah.
And E.T. is sitting next to
me. Okay, yeah.
You know, and we're just sharing a drink.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you could take over.
You know,
and something to show you.
And he decides to slip a roofie in my drink. You know, I'm probably going with him.
You're probably going with him. That's pretty funny.
Well, it would be a hard choice to make when three young kids at home. I'm guessing you're not getting into an alien spaceship.
Yeah,
I didn't think about
and
that.
And like I said, it comes down to it. But you know, I'm not going to disappear into the unknown.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, not with the family obligations.
No.
Yeah, but if he's a younger single guy.
Yeah, young single Andrew would have hopped in that sucker.
Would have hopped in.
Guaranteed he would have. Yep. So, he would look like that alien and said,
just like
by a laser.
Just like I was, it reminds me of a time back in college when there was a group full of young women that pulled up in a van and they said, hey, you want to come with us? And I'm thinking,
do I?
Yeah. You know, 19 years old. And off we went for a night of
yes.
What do you want to call it?
Debauchery?
A night of antics. Mm. You know, young college student antics.
Where was this?
I don't know, man.
In Salisbury State University. Wow. Yeah, and so this is the premise for this book. With the technology, there's any energy. There are superconductors. There is also improved healthcare. They have cures for... Alzheimer's. They have cures for diabetes. And so one of the things they do is they go find all these brilliant scientists who have brain diseases like Alzheimer's, and they cure them. And then because these scientists want to just continue their work, and they do, but they continue with Mark. But and so a lot of the Earth's scientists, and he ends up building this community, this amazing, you know, utopic community. But they have some guidance, a little bit of guidance, because they know the direction where things were going to work. So these scientists are discovering these things, but they are guided, and not everybody is allowed. It's only a small group that knows that there's actually a spaceship and there's actually an alien intelligence in there. Now, there's also a mystery, because basically a few days after discovering the spaceship, Mark gets an email. You know, sort of, you know, it's a little more complex than that, but he gets mm-hmm. what essentially is an email, which even the artificial intelligence is not allowed to see the contents of the email. And the email says, you know, the reason we needed a captain for the ship is because the previous captain was murdered.
Oh.
And as the medical officer, they have put the entire ship's crew on stasis. And so basically, because what the medical officer believes is this mission really was sent from this other alien race to be for altruistic reasons to kind of save Earth, to aid us.
Hmm.
But she believes that there's another faction that basically wants to take advantage of Earth. And that's the reason they poison the captain, is because they really wanted to take over the mission and go a different direction. And so she's told Mark, so not only do you have a race against time because your planet is going to degrade and things, all these things are going to happen, mm-hmm. and you have to improve the living standard for everybody, and save the planet. But you also have a race because you need to do this stuff before the people who are sabotaged this mission show up. And basically try and exploit your planet, right? So he's basically caught between a rock and a hard place, and that's just what he does. And so this book takes off, and of course, foreign governments and things, they find out what this technology is and they want to get a hold of the technology. Mm-hmm. So they also have to defend against that as well. But it is a race against time and space to save the planet. And, you read the first book, and each book ends in a cliffhanger. So each book ends.
Well, no wonder you had to keep reading.
Yeah.
You got really sucked in.
And it's like, how are they going to solve this?
Oh, hang on. Dave stepped on you.
Bring down the music.
Actually, John Williams stepped on
Andrew's mic.
I have to be careful what I talk about, but...
Go easy there.
And part of it too is they build a utopic society. They build a floating city.
Ooh.
But it is amazing to suspend disbelief and just fly off in Starship Shakira.
Ah, we're Shakira.
Yeah,
I
wanted to say Shakira.
We want to fly into a little Shakira.
That's what we need, a little Shakira sound clip.
We do. We need Hips Don't Lie.
Shakira, Shakira, Shakira.
It's a great impression, Dave.
And there is humor in this book. This book does not take itself too seriously, cool. but it is a fun book. It is,
sounds
and there
like
are
it.
Four more books to read in the series.
Fun. What's the name of it again?
It is Starship Shakira.
Okay,
Starship Shakira. All right,
by Bob Blanton.
Bob Blanton, recommended by. Doubt. That's our show for this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it. We appreciate you. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Inside Flap. Head on over to our website to support our Amazon page, theinsideflap.com. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dave Medicus, and we will see you next week.
Oh, goodbye. Sorry.
What a cruel thing war is, to fill our hearts with hatred instead of love for our neighbors. Robert E. Lee. Mm.
We recommend Single Light by Tosca Lee, When You See Me by Lisa Gardner, The Smiling Man by Joseph Knox, and Starship Shakira by Bob Blanton. Audiobook of the Week is Ablutions by Patrick DeWitt, narrated by the author.
Hey, you want some weed?